better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's going to bring back a College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
How many of you have booked your flight to Chicago or South Bend or are planning on driving up there for the game? How many of you want to see Touchdown Jesus, that campus, for the first time? I know I do. I know we were really excited to go down to Chicago, do our radio show there on Friday, and then head up to South Bend for the game. Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick came out and said Notre Dame Stadium will not be at full capacity in 2020. He said, we haven't gotten to the question of how big the audience is, but we won't be at capacity, he said on the Fight fundraiser. So I don't know how many tickets Arkansas has been allotted. I know it's not
5,000.
5,000. So I don't know how many of those. I'm assuming they're all sold out to this point.
Well, I'm sure there's been far more requests. When you did your season ticket renewal, you checked the boxes on the road games you'd like tickets to. I'm sure there were far more than 5,000 requests
because.
So I was told by a foundation officer, someone that works at the foundation, officer may be the wrong word, that there was enough tickets in that 5,000 allotment to get them through the Broyles Platinum, the Broyles Matthews Platinum, and part of the next level. Now, if you weren't Broyles Platinum upper level, you weren't going to get them.
Tickets are very expensive. It's very hard to find a hotel in South Bend. It's very hard to find an Airbnb in South Bend. I know a couple of my friends have already booked flights to either South Bend or Chicago, have already rented an Airbnb. But now, because of these comments, I would think that Arkansas is not going to get, now I don't know 100%, but I would think that they're not going to get those same amount of tickets, which is a bummer because this is the most exciting non-conference game that you've had in quite some time.
I would imagine most of our friends weren't going to get any from the university to begin with.
Yeah. It's tough, but that's how it is. This is the Morning Rush. He's Tommy Kraft. I'm Todd Richardson. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. We are always streaming live on hitthatline.com. Find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. If you want to watch our live video stream, you can also find us on the TuneIn app as well. If you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. Tom Murphy joins us at 7:15 this morning. Richard Davenport joins us at 8. Swarbrick would go on to say, we'll do something less than that, and we'll be very careful about maintaining social distance, how the facility works, and how you enter and exit it. So this kind of puts a damper. I know there's been different athletic directors, different governors, different people in high power that have already talked about either not having college football, doing that, but this directly impacts Arkansas, Tommy.
Yeah, man. I don't think that as we get closer, here's my frustration. We're making decisions about things in September, in May. And I know there's certain planning. I know there are certain, I think these ADs and these administrators have spent so much time planning, so much time talking to their counterparts. Hunter Yurachek has been doing daily meetings with the other ADs around the league and league administration, conference administration. That you feel like, well, we've done all this work that we need to put these plans into place. It's not time to put, and I'm not saying that's what the SEC is doing, but I think other counterparts around the country, like California, making a call on in-person classes in September. Now, I mean, we just don't have the information, in my opinion, to be making decisions that affect hundreds of thousands of people, directly or indirectly. You know, the other thing Notre Dame's got to think about, I was listening to Golic and Wingo on the way in, they were talking about the trip to Ireland that Notre Dame has planned to play Navy.
Or they open.
August 29th. You know, that's their opening game, and whether or not they're going to get the kids back on campus. And And, you know, if they don't feel like they can get them on campus by July 1, they can't make the deadline of playing a game in the end of August in Ireland. I can't imagine right now being committed to flying your entire travel party to another country to play a football game against Navy. I'll be shocked if that happens. They may play, but I'll be shocked if it's in Ireland. I could see that game being played, you know, somewhere here domestically perhaps, but not in Ireland. That just seems like a bridge too far for me right now with everything going on in the world. So, you know, for Notre Dame, the number of people they're going to allow in their stadium, to me, is one issue. What are you going to do about this first game of the year played in another country?
My buddy and his father had booked a flight over there, and now they're probably going to get their money back and stuff because he went to graduate school there in accounting, big-time Notre Dame fan. That was going to be their big trip. Like you, it's probably going to get Knicks.
Hope they get their money back.
Yeah, and I think with Arkansas, I mean, you think about how many fans were excited for this game, regardless if they were going or not, but it would be such a bummer to see Notre Dame either knock out a bunch of fans. I don't know what Notre Dame Stadium's called, but to not allow the full capacity, the full allotment of Arkansas fans to make their way, because when's the last time you've had, I guess, going down to Texas is probably the last non-conference game that you've been really excited about to this point,
you
right?
Mean Colorado State you weren't excited about? I'll take that as a no.
Were you?
No. Of course I was. To go to four. You're right. There hasn't been very many non-conference home-and-home type games that you said, man, I can't wait to play that one. Can't wait to go to this destination. I think this rises above all of them. But it's better than going to Texas. It's better than going to Jerry World, which I know is a conference game, but they used to be a non-conference game on a neutral site. This, to me, is the best non-conference road trip of my lifetime. And I want to be there.
Is there an equivalent that measures up? Like, is there a stadium? Is there a college football team that you would rather go on the road and play than Notre Dame?
There's just so much mystique around Notre Dame because they're Notre Dame. I mean, I guess the other one that would rise to that level that we're forgetting about because you got your ass kicked was playing USC in the Coliseum. Playing in the Coliseum is a pretty cool deal. I've been to the Coliseum. I wasn't there for that game, thankfully. But you had the Olympics there. There's so much history there. I mean, why do you want to go to Fenway? Why do you want to go to Wrigley? Why do you want to go to Notre Dame? Why do you want to go to these places? Because the level of history, the things that have happened on that very turf, you know, that very field, you know, that's why we have bucket list of venues we want to go to. South Bend's a bucket list type destination. That's, I mean, going to Texas, many fans had done that for years in the Southwest Conference. I bet you there isn't one out of 500 fans in Arkansas that have ever been to a game at South Bend.
And I would say it's probably even higher than that,
probably,
to be honest, because, I mean, what reason would you have to go to Notre Dame if Arkansas hasn't played unless you're just a diehard college football fan?
Right.
So the USC thing would be a good example. I think going to the Horseshoe, playing Ohio State would be fun. Going to the Big House, playing the Michigan Wolverines would be fun.
And I hate that trip got canceled.
And you wouldn't fare well in those games, in my opinion, because of how much farther along they are in their football programs than you, but we're just talking about the essence of playing a prestigious college football program in their house. Which
just happy to be there. Happy to be there.
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting to go to Clemson playing Death Valley. I know it's not the Death Valley equivalent to LSU, but going to Clemson in this day and age would be really fun just to see that atmosphere, to see that college football team on full display, even though you would just get absolutely run out of that stadium.
But it's still not on the same level of those other ones. South Bend, Coliseum in L.A. Horseshoe's a good one, but I think those other two, I mean, just because of all the other things that have went on, and just the particularly the Coliseum with the Olympics and everything, but South Bend is kind of the mecca of college football. Even has though, been for generations, even though they haven't been as good lately as they've were historic.
Do you know the last time Notre Dame's won a national championship?
I'm going to say, what was it, 88, whatever. Lou Holtz.
They got waxed in 2012 with Manti Te'o, but they haven't won, I think, since the 80s. I think Tommy's right on that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Finish up with two quick headlines before we get into what Houston Nutt had to say about Sam Pittman and other stuff on Ruskin and Zach. Cool thing that the Razorback Stadium, the Arkansas Athletic Program, is doing. They're lighting up the stadium in as tribute to local high school graduates. They're going to do it in various colors beginning Wednesday night as of last night of the different school colors kind of in the area. Like last night was Rogers. Tonight they're going to do Huntsville and Fayetteville, Elkins, more Rogers schools, Bentonville, Springdale, Siloam, and West Fork coming up. I mean, Tommy, I had a memorable night when it came to my high school graduation. I don't know about you, but I would think that any small gesture that either the university or high school can do for these kids that didn't get to go through normal graduation, I applaud them for.
No one's been, as far as experiences and socially and all of these things, no one's been shafted more than the high school senior. In my opinion.
I agree 100%.
I mean, just you think about prom, you think about graduation, you think about yearbooks. I don't know if they still even do that, where you get people to, your classmates, to sign your yearbook. Do they still do that, Jenkins? Is that still a tradition?
I don't know if it's like we're like in Little Rock Christian, but I know at BB the whole day, seems like my last year teaching, we got out of class at 10, did the yearbook presentation, and the whole afternoon was just signing yearbooks and memories and everything.
If I had a nickel for every Hags yearbook signature got, have a great summer, I would be a millionaire because I got a lot of those, especially senior year.
Yeah, so, I mean, all of those experiences just of senior year, you know, skipping class. Do whatever you do.
You skip class?
Oh, maybe.
I don't even think I skip class. Well, I was a good kid in high school.
You know, we talk a lot about the athletic, but that's just the social experiences you miss out on your senior year. But think of it, if you're a high school baseball, softball, any of the spring sports that played after basketball, didn't even get to have your final year. You were cheated out of 1/3 of your high school games. And for some players, that you waited your sophomore year because you didn't get to play. You were on the JV team. Maybe you played sparingly. Your senior year was finally your year to shine. Finally going to be the year you got to start at whatever position. No.
I know it was widely considered in BB before I came here. Our softball girls would have probably won the state championship this year. Because they got one girl coming up to Fayetteville next year. They got a pair going to Arkansas State. Another one going to Harding.
Yeah. So this is right. This is good that the U of A is doing this to honor them. It's one resource they have with the lights in the stadium. I don't know how many people will line up, how many people will take a part of this, but good for them to at least be thinking of them.
Whoever came up with it, props.
Good idea.
It's a good idea,
and it's a good effort. So,
did you have a good graduation night?
We had where I forget. Almost 500, 400 and some odd that graduated, I think, in my class.
I think I was 117.
And then they had this deal called Mash Bash afterwards. It was to keep us from drinking and driving. Don't be out drinking on graduation night. You know, so we had this deal, which, listen, no one should be drinking and driving. But we had to all go to this deal over here at Fort Chaffee and basically play pickup basketball and, you know, and it probably kept a lot of us out of trouble. But after graduation, rather than probably doing a lot of things that high school seniors would do, we were kind of quarantined, if you will.
See, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything against the law in high school. And I tried to get my brother-in-law to buy me alcohol that night. But my oldest sister, who is the mother of all the sisters, didn't let him. So I was I did do something I probably shouldn't have that night. But
and then you went to college and you went buck wild. Just first weekend.
U of A.
Arrested weekend number one.
You hired me. Whose fault is that? So, and you know what's funny about that, Tommy, is that that arrest got expunged. So legally, I can tell you, and I, you asked in the hiring process, there's the question, have you been arrested for a felony? There's no have you been arrested. It's just the felony charge that you don't just raise your eyebrows.
We don't want small-time criminals around here. We only want the big-time criminals.
I can legally say, because it's been expunged by judge, and I'm forgetting the judge's name, up in Northwest Arkansas, that I haven't been arrested because you can't find it in court records. So I still have my mugshot, of course, but legally I can say, because it's been expunged and I haven't broken a law since, that I have not been arrested
yet. I don't know. I passed you the other day on the street out here, and you were texting and driving. So I believe that's against the law as well.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Let's get in this Houston Nutt conversation on Sam Pittman. Houston Nutt is one of the best interviews. He's fantastic. He has always great stuff to say. He's always very into it. And you think about one of his strengths as a head football coach. It's motivation. These players right now, coming off back-to-back 2-10 seasons, coming off a 4-8 season the year before. I know there's not as many players on that team, on this team, upcoming year. But they need some motivation. There's some talent on this team. Despite what some people tell you, there is some football talent on this Razorback squad. And they need some motivation. Here's Houston Nutt on how he was able to motivate his guys back when he was the U of A head coach.
The thing that you miss so much is the camaraderie, the togetherness. Whenever we got a team in a room, you look side by side, and you look at your brother and say, hey, this is it. This is our family. Besides your immediate family, this is it. And it's easy. It's so easy to say, I confess it's your fault, or I can blame it on this, or I can blame it on that. It's easy to do that. But the greatness, and I was fortunate enough to be around some great players with big heart, and even some good players that had just even bigger heart, and they would play for one another. And so that, to me, is what you build on. You build on that family. You build on that togetherness. Everybody's got to pull their weight. Everybody's got to do their job.
That's a big deal. And you think about that 98 season, 4-7 the year before. What would they go the year before? Danny Ford?
That may be right.
In 97? I think it was 4-7. Jenkins, double-check that for me, because I can't remember that record. But the motivation...
That's the season we've all been trying to forget.
Yeah, and it was, like, in the movie Greater, which we've referenced before, they had kind of, like, this corny scene where, like, the seniors said, hey, we can win now. Was it 4-7?
4-7, 2-6 in the league.
That's what I thought. And there, and I didn't know if that was Disney'd up. I didn't know if that was true. We had Anthony Lucas on about a couple weeks ago, and he said, no, that was true. And their season, he said their mantra, their phrase for the whole season was coming together. And they really came together that football season and were able to get that close to an SEC West title, the SEC championship game. And the motivation factor from Houston Nutt, he was so good at getting players riled up, at getting players ready for big-time games. You think about some of the legendary speeches he had pregame. Most of them involved the Texas Longhorns, it seemed like. But he had a number of different big-time pregame speeches before big games, because that's where he was. That was his wheelhouse. That's what made him a really good football coach.
Well, it took him up a notch or two. And the thing with Houston out of those locker room speeches, we'd never seen that before. You know, KATV produced the coaches show at the time and did for many years. We didn't see that with Ken Hatfield. We didn't see that I remember, at least. I don't remember seeing locker room pregame speeches with Jack Crow or Danny Ford. Now, if they happened with Lou Holtz, if it was before my time and those happened, I don't have recollection of it. But the first recollection of that type of behind-the-scenes footage made that must-watch TV. You watched the Houston Nutt TV show on Sunday nights because you wanted to get you all fired up. You couldn't go to bed. It was better than a shot of espresso. And that's really what made up for some other deficiencies in his head coaching game. That was his greatest strength, was motivation. And not just because of those speeches, because of the things he did in the recruiting process, the way he handled players in practice. He had the Midas touch in how to deal with players, and that's why he was always considered a player's coach. Maybe not the best X's and O's guy. Maybe not the best in-game strategy guy. But when it came to get someone to play hard for him and their teammates, he was a master at that.
We've had Matt Jones on, Jonathan Louise on, a bunch of Houston Nut former players, and they are quick to defend their former head coach because you brought up him as a player's coach. Yes, he was deficient in some of those areas, in-game coaching. His ego got in the way, I think, in the 2006 season, but he was masterful in getting his guys geared up and ready to go. Now, when they played lesser opponents, it seemed like that they played down. But when it was a big-time game, regardless of the talent disparity that Arkansas often faced, you weren't always worried about that because it seemed like the guys, for whatever reason, would come ready to go. Well, it wasn't for whatever reason. It was because Houston Nutt got them that way.
Yeah, and he was talking yesterday. You may have this quote here because I know you've got several pulled, but he's talking about sweating for your teammates. That was one thing he learned from his dad. His dad was a basketball coach at the Arkansas School of the Deaf, and he would want to make sure that, you know, are you fighting hard for your coworkers, your teammates, and in this case, teammates, those to your left and to your right, and, you know, sweating for your teammates. That was one of the ways that, in one of his phrases, but one of the ways he got that to resonate with his teams was, you're not doing it just for me or yourself, you're doing it for your brothers on the team.
Yeah, and that was a big deal when it came to just his talent. One of the things that I did pull from yesterday is obviously Sam Pittman. He's your new head football coach at the University of Arkansas. And so you're always curious other opinions of him, not only in sports media, but former head coaches, particularly at the U of A. Here's Houston Nutt on a story way back in the day with Sam Pittman.
I remember Pat Gazzola telling me Coach Pittman was the first-time assistant at Arkansas. Pat couldn't say enough about Coach Pittman. He said, this guy is so good, such a good teacher, cares about these kids, and a great recruiter. And you're right. It comes through. When I listen to him talk, boy, he just embraces it. And, man, that's where it all starts. When you embrace this school and you embrace this Razorback, embrace these players, that, to me, is where it all starts. And that's what he sounds like to me.
Now, you hear that, and it's a little bit of proceed with caution because you did have former head coaches come out and give credit to Chad Morris and thought he was going to be successful.
Right.
It did not be in the case. You could say the same about Brett Bielema. There was a lot of former head coaches, current head coaches that said, Brett Bielema is going to be the guy. He's going to get it done. It didn't end up happening that way. But you do still like to hear it regardless, and you hope this time Houston Nutt's words are actually correct when it comes to your head football coach.
Are we living under the premise, or maybe I am a little bit, we've been wrong so many times, we're bound to be right this one, right? Every blind hog finds an acorn sooner or later. Maybe we've been so wrong about the last few coaches' hires, even though our initial optimism was carrying us through the first couple of seasons, or at least two with Chad Morris. Maybe this time we've got the right combination of things here.
Oh, it's the phrase, third time's the charm.
Well,
missed maybe on Bielema. You know, here's the thing. You didn't necessarily miss on Bielema. You just didn't get what you were expected out of Bielema.
He's a win or two away from
still
getting over the hump.
It's still being your head football coach.
You beat Missouri or you beat Virginia Tech, and certainly if you win those two, totally different scenario.
I just think with what he was able to do at Wisconsin, and I think that's more credit of Barry Alvarez and the culture up in Madison, that was the expectation almost of him coming to Fayetteville. You would have a similar type of structure, similar type of seasons. It didn't end up happening that way. And to say you missed on him 100%, I think is a little miscalculated because he did have Arkansas winning some games. He did have them on the brink. He just didn't get over the brink. With Chad Morris, you just missed it altogether. You missed it 100%. There's no, like, there's nothing you can point to positive out of the Chad Morris tenure outside of that one little recruiting class, which you didn't really get the benefits of because the guys weren't used properly in their freshman year.
It was a complete failure. Chad Morris, those 2 years, complete failure. You hire a coach, though, to get you to greatness. I think maybe we've adjusted our expectations with this hire that, hey, just get us back to relevance. You know, you normally hire a coach because you're not good enough where you're at. So we change coaches. What's going on isn't good enough to get us to our expectations. I think we've kind of met in the middle. We've adjusted the expectations. We're not worried about greatness. Let's just get back to relevance.
I think
we'll go from there.
That's a great point. And when you think about what Derek Ruskin was saying with the Chad Morris hire, this was going to be, after a certain period of time, after what he saw, he said this was going to be a two-coach hire where Chad Morris was kind of the barrier between that next head football coach. And as you mentioned, now you're hoping that said Sam Pittman, your head football coach, can get you back to relevance, because to go from where you are now to greatness in a number of years seems a little far-fetched. But you just want to be competitive again. I've always said about the Arkansas football program, if you can have winning seasons consistently and then have one banner year where you compete for the SEC West every 4 or 5 years, Arkansas fans are going to be happy. I mean, that lasted Houston Nutt almost 10 years at Arkansas. Years, yeah. So from 1998 to 2007, that's a I think that's a pretty good example. And I think Sam Pittman, he's got that place, or he's got the lot in Hamilton. He wants to retire to Arkansas, but he doesn't want to retire to Arkansas by getting fired or getting let go. His motivation is to bring this program back to prominence, back to where it's respectable again, because Arkansas baseball is one of the most esteemed programs in college basketball. Arkansas basketball, it's tier two, tier three, depending on who you ask, but a lot of people will tell you it's close. This recruiting class, the guys, depending on what Isaiah Joe does coming back, it's close. Arkansas football has a much longer road ahead, but you do want to get back to that point. It's always also fun to hear from Houston Nutt talking about former players. And you think about one of the more electrifying players, not only in Arkansas football history, but in college football history, the past 20 years, it's Matt Jones.
Well, I tell you, Matt was unbelievable at 6'6" and a quarter, 238 pounds, and ran 4.3. And it's amazing. Every time after a game, whether it be the offense, the guy coming across the field, whether it be Coach Fulmer's defensive coordinator, or Joe Lee Dunn, they'd always say the same thing. Didn't know he was that fast. The film just doesn't show he was that fast. You know, he has those long, gangly legs, but my goodness, man, he was something. He made things happen. You go, the first thing that stands out in my mind, of course, is the 7 overtimes. You know, he's so young, but he never flinched. He never felt pressure. I love when a guy can handle pressure. And when he can get in the huddle and the other 10 set of eyes believe, they believe in the guy. They believe that it's 3rd and 8, and they believe that Matt Jones is going to get him to 9. Clint Sterner had that.
So you think about Matt Jones, he was just such a gamer. So many great plays down the stretch in games, and the triple option was so effective of him, where they fake it to a running back, get out on the option with either another running back or a wide receiver, pump fake it to him, and then he was just gone off to the races. And there are a number of different examples, a number of different games that you can point to where that 4.3 speed was just on beautiful, beautiful display.
And he talked about the belief of the teammates in the huddle. I think that's something Ryan Mallett had. I think that's something Tyler Wilson developed in his career. I've heard many people tell me about Ryan Mallett's ability to go in and get his teammates, you know, to really gel there in practice and in those huddles and the ones that core of players. That's so important. The one thing Houston talked about yesterday, as I listened to most of this interview when it was on the air live, was the seniors on that team, they believe they could win. But the difference, and he was talking about, he talked to Dean Weber. Hey, all these guys, he ran through a list of players. They physically look great. They've got everything they physically need. What's the issue? He was trying to figure out the issue before the season. He said, Coach, they don't believe. They've never won. They've never done anything good, so they don't believe anything good can happen. And that's the one thing Houston sparked there, was a belief that became contagious amongst those teammates that we are good enough. We can do this. And that's what you're hoping Sam Pittman can replicate here, you know, 20-plus years later, is are the players good enough? That's a big question. I don't know that you have the core of players returning that just hadn't won, that, hey, the physical talent's there. But belief will carry you a long ways. Confidence will take you a lot further than you realize when you just believe it's possible. And I don't think these guys on this team, Ty, believe much as possible right now, because the last 2 years have been a complete failure.
This is going to be a not going to be a Georgia or Alabama type transformation where Nick Saban and Kirby Smart arrive at their respective schools and basically get to an SEC championship in year two. Nick Saban and Alabama got there in 2008, losing to Florida. Kirby Smart and Georgia, I believe, got there the second year and ended up losing as well. So this is not going to be that type of turnaround. But there is a turnaround potential with a guy that really wants to be here. And we can harp on that over and over and over again. Brett Bielema, it seemed like he wanted to be here. Wasn't the case. Chad Morris, you can make the argument that he wasn't fully bought in. This guy that you have right now up on the hill in that head coaching office wants to be here, which you would hope and you would speculate that that means a little bit more. You think about whatever job, whatever line of work you're in right now, whether you're the boss, whether you're the lowest guy on the totem pole, it doesn't matter. If you want to be there, it means that much more to you. That's probably going to help you along the way. Tommy's talked about, oh, he's known what he's wanted to do in radio since he was in high school. I kind of took a longer path. I love sports growing up, started in accounting in college, called my dad after first semester and asked if I could switch majors. He said, I'm paying for 4 years. You do whatever you want. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do this. And I'm very fortunate. This is not the most lucrative job in the world. This is not the most dazzling job in the world. You got to wake up early. But it's what Tommy wants to do. It's what I want to do. And it's what so many other sports media members want to do. Just like you, whatever line of field you're working. Maybe you hate your job. Maybe you absolutely hate your job. The only reason you're doing it is to cash a fat paycheck. That's fine, too. But I can guarantee you, most of you listening, if not all of you listening, would say that you're benefited by liking/loving your job. There's a motivation factor that you simply wouldn't have if you hated going to work every day.
Everyone that hates their job would take a pay cut to find something that brought them joy, that brought them happiness. And I promise you, as you know, we've all worked in environments. Maybe you're working in one now where there's one or two people in your organization or on the team you're in that they're just coasting. They don't want to be there. They're not sweating for their teammates like Houston was talking about. They're not operating with a sense of urgency that you have. Well, you know, you wish, as teammates, you kind of wish those people would move on, right? Because they're holding everyone else back when they're not working as hard as the people around them. So it can be cancerous to a team, just like it can be cancerous to a work environment when you got one or two people that don't want to get on the same page and operate at the same level of effort. And that's what Houston was able to do, is make people believe, and then everybody bought in. And when you start doing it for the people around you and not for your bosses, that's when great things happen.
And boy, did Houston not love Arkansas.
Biggest thing is, number one, is there's not another professional team in the state of Arkansas. Really, when you go from corner to corner, you can go to any restaurant, cafe, and there's somewhere in there is a Razorback in there. And I can remember growing up in Little Rock, Arkansas, Bud Campbell and all these great sportscasters. And I remember coming across TV, on the day, hey, the Razorbacks are coming to town. They start calling the Hogs, and it just would give me chills. You know, as a 7 and 8 year old, they're calling the Hogs. I'd tell my brother, calling them Hogs already. They're getting ready. And it would be 11 o'clock in the morning. They don't play the 7:30 that night. I think that's big when you have a state that gets behind your team from corner to corner. And I know there's been some hard times, but, it can turn in a minute. It can flip.
No other SEC school can say that about their entire state. Think about that. No other SEC school in their entire state can say that. Arkansas State does not hold a candle to the Arkansas Razorback fans at all. Now you got Louisville and Kentucky. You can make the argument Big Blue Nation and stuff, but it does not. Like, the state of Arkansas, as far as its football program and its dedication to Razorback sports, does not hold. No SEC program holds a candle to the love that they get from fans all across this state.
Only thing close would be LSU, and they still have the Saints there.
Pro teams.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, pro teams.
But LSU's probably as big as the Saints inside the state of Louisiana.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade.
a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Richard, good morning. We opened up the show with some quick hitting headlines, and we were talking about something Eric Musselman said on halftime yesterday regarding uniform rules in the NBA and college basketball. Richard, why do you not think there's more uniform rules across college basketball and the NBA?
Each kind of wants to be their own own thing, I guess. You just have a different people making rules, and I guess, you know, when you get to the NBA, it's all about entertainment, and with the shot clock and different rules, you definitely protect your best players, and they very seldom foul out, and you're all about entertainment and taking care of the stars. And in college basketball, you have that to a certain extent, but nothing like that in the NBA. And I just think that you get two different committees, people together to come up with rules, and that's what you got.
Tommy, is it 7A high school basketball that's getting a shot clock next year?
Yeah, they've adopted that in those conferences. Okay. It's actually 6A. There is no 7A in high school basketball. It's the same schools that we think of as 7A, though.
But yeah, but they aren't
Bentonville, Fayetteville, Rogers.
And isn't there like
Little Rock schools?
But it's like 5A and stuff. They're getting ready for a shot clock. I know it costs a lot of money, but like because
many of the new gyms are equipped with it. But Richard, these other conferences, to my knowledge, have not adopted that. But I think they will follow trend. I think when all of those meetings were getting ready to take place, and some of those conferences, because I've spoken with some of those ADs, we're going to meet as a conference and have a discussion at the state championship basketball games. Well, everything got blown up right in those few days. So I think other conferences across Arkansas will look at this, but haven't had a chance to do so.
It wasn't you heard some of the smaller schools talk about costs. Wasn't that a concern?
But I think
I don't know. That's
it's going to be a 35 second shot clock in high school. But I do think that they're trying to, just speaking of rules, bring some things closer together. And I think there is a desire, particularly on the high school level, to improve the quality or the entertainment value of not letting a team stall it out for 4 minutes at the top of the key and just hold the ball. So some of these games have turned into 28-26 finals, and they want to, and maybe improve upon that, because is it really getting kids ready for college basketball on the next level where they're going to play with a 30-second shot clock every game?
Yeah, I remember hearing about Bo Emery, who was coaching the Lumberjacks, and when they faced Magnolia, and obviously Darian Ford and that crew. I forget what it was, 26-18 the final was, mm-hmm. or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was, I thought it was kind of comical. I mean, I know it was frustrating for some people, but at the same time, if you're a coach and you're outmanned, take advantage of the rules.
And I think I remember Skip Sanford was the old women's coach at my high school, Richard, and I remember they employed a four corners offense at one point because they were playing a far more talented team. I don't think they won, but they kept it close. But to me, that's not basketball. I know high school, we have shot clock in college, shot clock in the NBA. I just don't know how we can't get to that at all high school levels. And I know that there's a money issue with certain small schools with smaller budgets, but to me, that hurts the game of basketball and really the presentation of it.
Yeah, I tend to think, I made the comment that, you take advantage of the rules, and you do until, let's face it, some of those games kind of force the hand of, the AAA and the conferences of trying to make it happen and getting a shot clock for each school. And I think it's doable, especially, it may not be anytime soon just because of the way the economy is being hurt right now. But usually you have some business people in each community that's willing to you know, help the school. And but at the same time, you know, they may have to delay it for a year or two until the economy gets going again.
Yeah, you know, Coach Musselman was talking about the difference in halves versus quarters. The college men's game is the only game left that plays in halves. NBA, the women's college game, everything else has moved to four quarters. Why do you think it is that college men's basketball is the last holdout on changing the format of the game? Not the 40 minutes, but just the format of how it's played.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have a great answer for you. I think it's, you know, you just do something for so long and you're comfortable with it and you don't see a need to change. And you know, I think it takes coaches like Coach Musselman and others to kind of force the issue and maybe get the, you know, get the public on it, on your side, and put some pressure on the conferences and ultimately the NCAA.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, usually all these committees that make these determination are filled with coaches. I think there's just a desire for the men's game to have the differences and to be different. I think it's also interesting that, you know, you look at some of the other things that he was talking about and trying to bring the game along. Ultimately, I think you want your game in college basketball to mirror as much as you can with the NBA, whether it's rules, whether it's the way they go about it. Ultimately, they put more time, more money, more research, Richard, into making sure we got a great entertaining product here. I think college basketball has struggled with that over the last 10 years and trying to make those differences come alive. What are some of the other things from the NBA game you think college basketball could do to be more entertaining?
Well, I mean, if you know, the 35-second clock and then narrow, or the shot clock narrowed down to 24, mm-hmm. You know, maybe. And
I think advancing the ball. I think one thing you could do late in the game is if you call a timeout, you get to advance it to the 28-foot mark in the front court to give you one last chance to get up that last thing. I think that adds excitement to the end of the game and something the women's game has done in college, but the men's game has not yet. I think that's one thing the NBA does well that could add some excitement to the end of games.
So you're looking at it from the rules standpoint, as far as the, you know, from a referee standpoint, and I don't know the rules quite as well as you that, you know, could simplify and maybe you know, make the game a little better. I mean, I think that's obviously something to take a look at, no doubt.
And I think when you do something like that, it's all about, when it comes back to, it's the television product, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you want to make the television partners happy. And I think Tommy was bringing it up this earlier, and I thought it was an excellent point. There's a block when you look at the SEC Network games, when you look at games on Saturday, that you want to concise it to 2 hours. And I don't know if having four quarters compared to just two halves, how much of an impact that would have on time constraints, but I do know that they're trying to keep it in that. And so I wonder how much of a deal that is, just trying to keep it in that two block window. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, that would add it. That would, you know, you have the TV timeouts, then that, you know, you would have to, I guess, you know, if you do the four periods, four quarters, you'd have to kind of make it, do an adjustment as far as the TV timeouts somewhat so, you know, you just don't slow down the games too much. And like you said, that two hour window, how frustrating is it when a game goes into overtime or a game that doesn't even go into overtime and it bleeds over into your game and you're frustrated? So you don't want to make it to the point where you're having more of that, and then you're going to have more frustrated fans on the other side waiting for their games, and it's just that can end up hurting the game a little bit.
Yeah, you already got 8 stoppages with the 4 media timeouts per half. Then each team has their timeouts that they call. They don't always have to use one in the first half or lose it. And you're right, you get to the end of the game, they got all these timeouts built up, and then you're trying to foul to put the other team on the line or call timeouts. And that is the worst, is when you're ready for your game and it's a big game and we got some game before you that's an 8 or 9 point game that's holding up the show. And I think figuring out how to get these things to fit in a 2 hour box is something college basketball could do to really, I think, improve the TV part of the product.
No doubt. That's what let's face it. It's all about TV and keeping the TV people happy. And also, when you do that, usually the fans went out too, because you probably won't you minimize the delays and maybe the bleed overs into other games.
Talking with Richard Davenport here on the Morning Rush. Richard, Harrison Ingram put Arkansas in his top 10. I don't know if he's going to end up a Razorback, but if he does, I know he's a 4-star on 24/7. He's a 4-star on ESPN, if I remember correctly, and a 5-star on Rivals. What would he be as far as rankings goes if he ended up signing with Arkansas relative to the players that you've had committed and signed in the last 20 years?
Oh, he would be way up there. Portis was previously the highest, and I forget what he was rated. I think he was top 20, top 25. And you got Harrison Ingram at currently, according to ESPN, a top 20. He's number 18, and then you know, obviously a little higher according to other services. But he is a guy that you know, has a capability of possibly being a one and done. I haven't seen him play in person. I'd really like to be able to see him in person before I have an opinion on that. Just because, you know, usually, When you're thinking about one and done, and when I've been able to go to events, spring and summer events, you can tell who's capable of being one and done. They have the game, but they also have freakish athletic ability. I don't know if he has that freakish athletic ability. Obviously, on film, he looks very good. But when you get to see him in person, that's when you really can break it down as far as his athleticism. But he would be a huge get. He could obviously move up in the rankings according to ESPN and what other services that may not have him as a 5-star. So he could end up being a 5-star, and he would obviously be one of the biggest gets in Arkansas basketball history.
Richard, he had this to say on Tuesday about Musselman. He said, "Coach Muss is awesome. His NBA offense and connections is what really stands out to me and how he wants to use me. He wants to buy... or he wants to build me as a jumbo-sized playmaker and do a variety of things on the court." From his offensive mind and the sets that he runs, getting, like, there's a lot of sets are from all over the place. I mean, just the other day he was talking about with Phil and Matt about the Milwaukee Bucks offense and how they're going to implement it. We always talk about his coaching perspective, his times in the G League, his times in the NBA. But how much do you think Eric Musselman tailors his offense and defensive sets like an NBA team?
Well, I mean, you do that to the strengths of your players and who can help you win games. And obviously you get a guy like Harrison Ingram who can take over a game. You point that out to him. You show how you can utilize him and how he can be maximized in his system and be prepared for the NBA, the next level, which obviously he wants to. That's where he wants to go. He even said the other day during the Instagram interview that he'd like to be a one and done. Whether that happens or not, who knows? But you want to go to a program that can, you know, it's been there, done that. Far as at least the coaches, far as being in the league, and they understand what it takes and what the NBA is looking for. So that kind of obviously helps, you know. I think with guys like Harrison, I'm not going to say he's going to end up being a Razorback, because obviously there's 9 other schools that are very, very, very good programs. So, but I think that does that definitely play, you know, in his thinking about Arkansas.
Richard, the real deal in the Rock's been pushed back to like July 24th, 25th, 26th. We're seeing, you know, the summer basketball and those development programs really diminish. The NCAA's canceled their basketball academy with their 4 regional sites around the country. How do you think these summer events will – do you think they, A, will actually play? And how many teams are going to be able to travel from all parts of the country to showcase their athletes in a place like Little Rock?
Yeah, I just don't see it happening, to be honest with you. You have some, I saw where like 3 different committees were suggesting to the NCAA to extend the dead period to July the 31st. The NCAA extended it to June the 30th, but they're going to be making a decision pretty soon whether or not to extend it. So I tend to think it's going to be extended into July. I don't think you're going to see any summer basketball. It's unfortunate because that's a lot of these guys. You know, Harrison Ingram, he doesn't need to be on the circuit or anything like that. But some of these guys that are maybe don't have any offers or maybe have 1 to 2, 5 offers, some of those guys go into the summer last few weeks and they can really blow up. But, yeah, I just don't see it happening.
Is it a bigger problem for the 2021s or is the lack of summer ball affect the 2022s and 23s more?
I think in 2021s, yeah. Because now they're going to have to do it in high school basketball, and it's harder to evaluate in high school basketball because the competition level is just not as good as it is during the spring and summer. So, and then what if we don't have any high school basketball because of the virus? You're really, as a coach, you're going back and you're looking at film. You're looking at your notes when you were able to see those kids maybe last spring and summer, or you may not even were able to see them. And you're going to be making evaluations based on just what you see on film, and it's just not the same as being able to see them in person.
Richard, I like 24/7 sports when it comes to football recruiting. I know you have connections all over the place. You talk to Tom Lemming. I know you speak to Paul Biancardi for ESPN with basketball. Who is your favorite and what is your favorite recruiting service and national college basketball guy to follow when it comes to the recruiting stuff?
The guys that you just mentioned that I talked to, because Tom Lemming, he's been in the business for 41 years. Biancardi, he's been a college coach and he was a successful college coach and now he's, you know, obviously a national recruiting analyst. So those guys are the guys that I go to. And Tom, I mean, he goes back. His first All-American team in football was Dan Marino and Eric Dickerson and several others. So he's seen a lot of football. He's evaluated a lot of kids through the years. He sees about 1,500 to 2,000 kids a year when he travels the country. So, I like the experience.
Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can follow him on Twitter at @ARRecruitingGuy. Read his stuff on Whole Hog Sports and hear him every Thursday on the Morning Rush at 8 o'clock. Richard, really appreciate it, buddy. You have yourself a good weekend, man.
All right, guys. Take care.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
All right, let's get into it. On a Thursday, we're going to do some trivia. Let's go at it.
The toughest questions.
What is going on?
The easiest answers.
Trivia!
Pick your category.
Light on medical knowledge, heavy on Broadway trivia?
Ty or Tommy?
Fight!
It's time for Trivia Thursday.
I don't remember what the total score was last week for the old NFL trivia. I did know I'd come out of victor, and so in doing that...
You beat me soundly. It was by 2.
It wasn't a blowout, but it was
by 2, I believe.
So the idea is the loser from the previous week, to make it fair, gets to pick the next category. So Tommy is elected what?
Masters Trivia.
Let's go at
it. Like I ought to have an advantage here.
You should. Hopefully. By the way, class is in session. I'm no longer SmackDown or Matt. I am Mr. Jenkins. So that's what you shall refer to me as the last part of the show.
All right, Matt. Do we need to change this from Price is Right to the Jeopardy theme? Would that fit trivia better?
I like Price is Right. This is the most recognizable one. That's why I picked it.
All right, so got 15 questions. First one to spat out the answer will get the point. We'll kick this thing off.
So this is not multiple choices?
No, everything's multiple choice.
Oh, okay.
Yes, because I did it for Ty's sake.
All right, gives him a chance.
All right.
A lot of pressure on you, Tom. If you lose, what are people going to say?
Your
own category, too.
Yeah, that's true.
He could go fishing. I'll give him props. He didn't go fishing like I thought he would.
Yeah. I'm not sure what fishing trivia questions we would ask.
The Masters Tournament was first held on March 22nd, 1934, but wasn't called the Masters until which year? 1937, 38, 39, or 1940?
somewhere in there. If you'd have said 38, 58, 60, I would have known the answer. It's one of those late years.
Yeah, you're on the right track.
Yeah, 1938.
That is incorrect.
All right.
1940.
That is incorrect. The correct answer was 39.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the more obscure ones in this whole thing right here.
I knew it did not start as the Masters, but I didn't know which year it was.
Which one of these golfers won the most Masters tournaments? Arnold Palmer. I have a hard time saying his name.
Arnie,
Dick Faldo, Sam Snead, or Jack Nicklaus?
Jack Nicklaus.
That is correct. Do you know how many he won?
Six.
When was his... Okay.
1986 was his last one.
Well, that took care of that question I was fixing to ask. So, all right.
I get a point for that, too, then.
All right.
what the hell are you doing? No. Golly.
I'm just kidding.
Teacher Mike.
It's Mr. Jenkins to you.
You don't say what the hell to the teacher.
What was the question, by the way?
It was what year did Jack win his last green jacket?
When did he win his last green jacket?
All right. 86, right?
Yeah. Just gave you the answer.
All right, I'll rephrase this question then. How old was he when he won his last green jacket?
I know.
If you know, you don't have to wait on it. You can fire.
46 years old.
You want me to give him a point for that, or?
Yeah, you can. If you ask him a question and he answers it, you can give. You're not just going to shove points down his throat.
46 years old. Boy, you're getting tested. Last time I saw you shooting threes and there's air balls going up.
Well, you haven't seen me play basketball.
That's what's fixing to happen here soon anyway. So, who hold the longest putt in Masters history? Nick Faldo, Tiger Woods, Bubba Watson, or Arkansas's own John Daly?
The longest putt. Daly has not played very many. He's played in some Masters, but not as many as those other guys you just listed.
Faldo, Woods, champions. Watson, or Daly?
Ooh, longest putt?
Who made the longest putt?
I'm going to go Tiger just because.
That is incorrect.
I need to
get this right here.
Faldo?
Faldo is correct.
All right,
good for you.
I didn't document how long it was, but that's what the
longest
good old,
putt in Masters history.
That's what Google told me.
I was just eliminating John just based on rounds played. So.
Going back to the first Masters tournament, who was declared the winner of the first Masters tournament in 1934? Was it Horton Smith, Craig Wood, Billy Burke, or Paul Runyon?
Craig Wood.
That is incorrect.
Runyon, I like that name.
Runyon is incorrect also.
It's
Horton Smith.
It's Horton Smith. I knew Craig Wood was like the
Horton Smith
40 or 41 champion somewhere there.
Okay.
All right. These next two questions will be similar, but there's one key word that makes them different. Who is the youngest winner of the Masters? Is it Steve Ballesteros, Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, or Jack Nicklaus?
Tiger Woods.
It's actually Tiger Woods.
It's just a few months, too.
Yes, by 5 months. Jordan Spieth was 21 years and 8 months old. Tiger was 21 and 3 months old. All right, who was the youngest player to participate in the Masters? Was it Guan Tialong? I have no idea if I said that name right. Bob Panasic, Tad Fujikawa, or Justin Thomas?
the third guy you said there.
The third guy's incorrect.
Yeah.
Say the first two again. I don't think it's just
Guan Tianlang or Bob Panasic. Those are the first two.
Panasic
is incorrect. Also, is actually Guan Tialong. He was 14.
Sure, you're nailing that name.
I'm sure he was 14 years old, and he made the Masters.
Okay.
All right. Tommy's up 3-1 right now. Who holds the record at the Masters for the most top tens and most cuts made?
Jack Nicklaus.
That is correct, Tom. That's
correct.
Yeah. Because he got second. How many times?
I don't know. That may be another question. I don't think
I put that in there. Jack had 22 top tens and 37 cuts made.
Yeah.
So the second one isn't in there? Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. And if it is, I'll skip it.
Okay. So how many was it? 17 second place finishes? That might be majors.
No, that was majors. He finished seven.
Oh, got a little golf.
So he won 17 majors. He finished runner-up like 19 times.
19. Okay.
He won 17. He was like runner-up 19.
Tommy's in the lead 3-2. Who holds the record for most Masters appearances with 52?
Arnold Palmer.
That is incorrect.
No, Gary Player. Gary Player is the answer.
Gary Player. Thank you, Tommy. Why would you answer that?
You can't say Gary Player. Yes. I gave you the damn answer.
That's your own fault.
No, that doesn't count.
That's your own fault.
Gary Player's the answer.
Yeah. Children.
Thank you,
children.
Tony.
Protest.
Why would you
I love
say
that you were just
that?
Talking about not arguing with each other.
You wouldn't. You didn't either. You don't even know who Gary Player is.
Gary Player was one of the best golfers ever alongside
yeah. Where's
Jack
he from
Nichols.
Then?
Somewhere in the southeast. Right?
Takes yeah. the point off the board. Yeah. It's from South Africa.
Oh. The, the south, that's Southeast Africa, yeah.
Ooh, like boy. That. Got y'all fired up today. The course record at Augusta National is 63, and it is shared by two players. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read you off seven players. You tell me the two of them.
It's Greg Norman and Nick Bryce.
Bam.
All right. Easy enough. Do you, know what the years they were? That's just not for a point, no, but do you know what year it was?
90. For Norman, it would have been 96 or 7.
96, yeah. Nick Price.
I'm going to get 04?
86.
86. I don't know, pure guessing.
All right.
I was only off 20
4-3 years. In favor of the boss man. What year was the most watched Masters Sunday of all time? 2010, 2014, 2015, or 2019? 2019
Tommy
is correct.
Got first, yeah. That, I mean, when Tiger was
Titans
on.
Tiger.
Yeah.
Dude.
All right. Bonus question with that. What was the average number of viewers for that Masters Sunday?
9 million. I'm guessing.
We'll see who gets closer.
10 million.
Ty gets closer. It was 10.8 million. 5-4. That was the one Tiger. That was last season when Tiger yeah. finally got the Masters.
Yeah.
How
the
many
return to glory or whatever it was?
Yeah, what a
Jim
call, what
said.
A call that was. Yeah. Yeah. That, no, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. That and probably one of the. I mean, I know it's not the most iconic Sports Illustrated cover, but that cover of him just.
Oh yeah,
it's one of them. It's up them. There. And you mentioned so we talked about, you know, how Keith Jackson with the 2005 mm-hmm. Texas Let It Breathe. Jim Nantz just let it.
Oh, he always has the perfect one-liner yep. at the yeah. end of the Masters. Yeah.
How many hole-in-ones have there been in Augusta National? 25, 27, 29, or 31?
Are we only talking in tournament competition?
This was according to the Masters website.
All right.
So I'm assuming this is in tournament play, but this is just what the website right. said. How many hole-in-ones have there been at Augusta National? 25, 27, 29, or 31.
I'm going to go high side, say 31.
31 is incorrect.
27.
27 is incorrect. It is actually 29.
We split the difference again.
Split the difference again. Tommy's still in the lead 5-4. Down to the final three questions. Which, it's still with the hole in one, which hole at Augusta National has the most hole in ones? Is it hole 4, 6, 12, or 16?
I couldn't even tell you which one of those. It was all par fours, Tommy. Or threes, I mean, excuse me. Par threes.
Par threes.
Yeah, not par
fours. Four's long. It's like 220 yards. 12's the most famous par three in all of golf.
I don't know why you're giving me help on this. I would just.
I'm just telling you what the hole. I mean, you don't even know if they're par fours or threes.
Yeah.
So.
4, 6, 12, or 16?
16 is my guess.
16 is correct. Ty, you need to get these last two.
Just a tie. Then
just
a tie.
Then we're
going to have to do a bonus one.
Well, I didn't put a bonus one on here because I screwed up on that beginning one. So, anyway, Tiger Woods holds the record for the widest margin of victory in the 97 Masters. How many strokes did he win by? 11, 12, 13, or 14?
Oh, you don't want to jump out? You want me to go first? See if I'm wrong.
Well, you split at 13.
Trying to think.
13, that is incorrect.
12.
12 is the correct answer. Yeah.
All right, last one's
last
about
one,
75%
on that one.
Last
on
words.
One.
Last
this one should have my
points.
Name in there eventually if I ever get to play at Augusta National. Who holds the record for the worst official scorecard
Ooh.
At the Masters? Is it Billy Casper, Ben Crenshaw, Charles Kunkel, or Sergio Garcia?
I don't believe it's Sir. Go ahead. I'm not going to say.
I was going to say Sergio's pretty up there for the most part. I don't know if he ever wins, but who, say the first three again.
Billy Casper, Ben Crenshaw, or Charles Kunkel.
Kunkel? I don't know.
That is correct.
Yeah.
He shot a 95.
Last one's worth 3 points, so we're tied now, Tommy.
Oh, you're changing the rules.
Now, I will say the website said Billy Casper shot a unofficial 105 because he did not turn in his scorecard.
Yeah.
So, officially, it's Charles Kunkel, but... Billy Casper could probably get that knee shot of 105 at Augusta.
All right, so Tommy redeemed himself this week, won 8-6. So now I get to choose the category next week. Probably do something like old NBA. If you have a category idea, text it in 877-377-6963.
Were those questions better?
Those were good questions.
Those were solid, yeah. Okay. So
I tried not to get too, like, obscure.
I think they were, like, perfect in the middle where they weren't too easy and they weren't too difficult. Like, who out of this player, who's won the Masters, and you list off like three football players and a golfer. Like, I hate those type of questions when you can't figure it out.
And Jack's won 18 majors, not 17.
That's what Chad said.
18 majors.
Did
he
I say
finished?
So? Did
no, I said it wrong.
Oh,
he finished runner up more times than he won.
How many does Tiger have? Is Tiger 15?
Was it now
14?
13 to 14.
Yeah,
I think.
After winning the Masters a year ago,
so he's not catching Jack.
I don't know. I predict Tiger will win one later than 46. Tiger will become the oldest player to win the Masters. Now, he's 44. Got a couple more years till he can actually qualify for that honor. But he is the second oldest to win the Masters now at 43 years old. Last
behind Jack at 46. So how old's Tiger right now?
He's one day older than me. Yeah. He was born on the 30th day of December of 1975. That's apparently when all the golf talent was handed out that year. And I was born the following day.
I was going to say, I guess...
where all the caddying talent was handed out.
It's a shame that year. It's a shame that Tiger wasn't
he's one
born
day, and LeBron's birthday is like the 30th of December. There are a few more than you realize superstars that are born on the 30th of December.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.